Go behind the scenes with Colleen.
Hello, hello. Danny Zalisco.
That's me.
Danny Z, how are you?
What's up, Colleen?
It's good to meet you.
Same here.
And I'm 10 chapters in this book we're getting ready to talk about, and I wish I could turn back time and be you.
You can. Go ahead and just finish reading it.
I know.
You mean?
What a fun life.
Oh, thanks.
All excess, great. Occupation, concert promoter, basically says it all. But Danny, what was your first concert? Got to ask you that first.
First concert I booked was Herbie Hancock in Phoenix in 1974. He just put out this album that turned out to be the groundbreaking Headhunters record, which was a jazz fusion funk record that was like the first platinum jazz record ever. And that was also when I learned book people who are more popular than Herbie Hancock, because you'll make money that way.
Well, Danny, I meant what was your first concert you ever saw?
Oh, that I saw?
Yeah.
God. You know, you're going to laugh. I don't even know if you've heard of this guy. The first real star that I ever saw live was a guy called Ral Donner.
Nope.
And he had a big, I can't remember the name of the song, but he had a big song in the 60s. He was kind of one of those, like a Dion and the Belmonts kind of guy.
Okay.
With the Buffon, you know?
And how old were you?
Oh, 5, 6.
Oh, wow. You got an early start.
The shows really didn't start happening for me till the end of the 60s. When I was, 14, 15, 16, and I was allowed to go downtown to see groups. And my earliest memories of the shows that really made me want to do what I'm doing were things like Humble Pie was playing, and then they added King Crimson to open after it was sold out.
Nice.
I was hooked. Pink Floyd came, and they played to 900 people out of 4,000. It was a total stiff, and I loved every second of it. Not understanding what the ramifications were of how few people were there. Then they booked a show the next week for 1972, and it sold out in 5 minutes based on that other show that was a stiff.
Jeez.
And little by little, I learned the nuances of how this business worked in a very naive, kind of an ignorant way. But after you watch close enough for a while, you become a student of it like anything else, and you learn it, and if you love it, go for it, and that's what happened.
But you know what? I also think you have a great personality, because just reading it and how you just established relationships right off the bat, people wanted to talk to you. So not everybody has that.
You know, I agree. I mean, not many people or as many people show that they have that. I think that's living in everybody, and all they got to do is let that character out. Mm-hmm. There's a wonder, you know, that I have about these people, how fantastic they are without gushing on them. You know, they don't like gush. They like approval. They like being admired.
Right.
They like compliments. But these people don't like it when you're sloppy.
Yeah.
And I learned very early, don't be sloppy around these people. Be regular. Be normal. And they'll hang out with you. And they do. And they're fun.
And I give you a lot of credit, because in Chapter 7, you actually turned down a gig from Bill Graham. What?
Well, you know, he offered me $400 a week to move a month,
right,
to move to Denver. I thought it was $400 a week. I was ready to go in 1974. I mean, that was a decent wage. But he meant $400 a month. I got to laugh with him about that later. He goes, oh, I meant to say a week. I said, no, you didn't. He was fantastic. What a guy.
Yeah. The foreword to the book is from Diamondbacks manager Kirk Gibson. How did sports factor in?
In 2007... Bob Melvin, who's a great big music fan, he's the manager now of the Oakland A's. He was in Phoenix managing the Diamondbacks, and Kirk Gibson, was his bench coach. And he brought Gibby and his wife to come see The Who were playing at the Suns basketball arena in, downtown Phoenix. We became really good friends right away, and a couple years later, Gibby was named manager of the Diamondbacks in 2011. And I owned a spare house down the street from me here that I bought as an investment and used for storage. And he asked me if he could live in it for a while until he could find a house. And then Alan Trammell, his bench coach, moved in with him. So I had two guys from the old Tigers staying in the house. And I had just the greatest time with them. You know, I mean, to be able to stop off and sit with Gibby and talk about stuff. It was a great time. So I asked him to write the foreword for the book, and I thought he did a beautiful job.
Yes, he did. All Excess took 4 years for you to write. How hard was it to remember? Did the photograph? You have so many great photos in here. Did they help jog the memory? Or you just...
The photos definitely helped. I had started doing bullet points for chapters a long time before. In fact, I found an email the other day that had clearly about 20 chapters earmarked as from 2011, so it's 10 years ago. Right. I've had this thing kind of on deck for a long time, and what actually happened was I was watching Shark Tank. This is in 4 years ago, almost mm-hmm. 5 years ago. I was watching Shark Tank one night, and a guy came on that said he was a ghostwriter, and he would write your story for you. I'm going, it could be that simple. I called the guy the next day, and he helped me write it.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I always had the stories, but the thing that he encouraged me to do was not worry about the chronological order of the situations that took place. Rather, get the story together first, treat them like separate entities, and then you can move them around and edit it later and make it read well. And I think we did a good job of that. He really helped me out a lot, and then he deserted me, so... Anyway,
I do think, Danny, it also keeps people's attention. I like that they're short chapters and you can put it down and then pick it up a little later and not feel like, oh, I forgot what I just read.
Yeah, it's exactly what I really wanted to do with that was like that's why there's several chapters and then there are maybe a page or 2 pages with some pictures because there's just something that stood out from that particular act or relationship that I had that I wanted to point out without feeling like I had to add a whole bunch of cereal to it to make it bigger. There's so many people to write about and put pictures in there. And that's why, you know, with all the pictures in there, that's why those captions are as long as they are, because I wanted to tell little vignettes, little stories about those people so as not to let them, you know, go through a book that has something to do with me without being in it.
Yeah.
It's really important to me they were there.
And that begs the question, will there be a second volume?
You know what? I'm gonna work this one as long as I can.
And I don't blame you.
Hopefully it'll get around. it'll bring back to people that great, you know, time where we were discovering things. And in our cases, as young people in the 60s, 70s, 80s, we discovered these new bands that kept coming out. And we were so lucky to be around when they were brand new.
Yep.
And to grow up with them, I think it really set the table for, you know, what's going on today.
And you're not only a promoter of music, but you're a huge fan. You've got a collection of, you collect autographs and memorabilia. And can you actually name a favorite piece of memorabilia that you own?
Oh, yeah. Over the years, I've been working with my 3 favorite guitarists, Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, and Jimmy Page. They have the Yardbirds in common, even though they weren't all in the Yardbirds at the same time. They still come from that school. And I got a guitar signed by the 3 of them, which I call the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
That Jimmy gave me this Fender Telecaster, and I got Eric and Jeff to sign it too. And I would say that's my favorite piece.
Wow. All right, so if you had a crystal ball, what would it be telling you about the future of live concerts post-pandemic?
I'm very convinced and very confident that we'll have shows this year. I like the direction and the feel of the way things are right now, and I hope people won't jump too quickly. I mean, we've waited this long for things to try to settle down or get solved, and it seems like both are happening, even though they're not done yet. Right. But, you know, to me it looks like somewhere around the end of August, early September, where I think we're going to be able to sit around each other and enjoy a show. I mean, for me right now, for the type of shows that are of an auditorium quality, mm-hmm. I'm not talking about festivals or arena
right.
shows, but like regular auditorium shows, like if Tony Bennett comes, why can't I go sit down and watch Tony?
Right.
You know, I mean, I'll wear my mask, I'll sit there quietly, and I'll enjoy him, you know, and he wants me to sit there quietly so he can be heard anyway. And, you know, there's a lot of bands and a lot of acts out there that I think will be back and performing for us sooner than others that don't require, you know, all of the bells and whistles, but just require a microphone and a stage and you know, people to come in and enjoy it. It's not going to be long, is what I feel, and it can't be because, you know, mommy needs new shoes.
Sure. Now, I have to ask you, because you're talking to Baltimore, have you ever been to the legendary venue Hammerjacks?
Never. No, but I was to the Babe Ruth Museum years ago.
Okay.
Greatest things I ever did. Oh, I love Babe. I miss Babe. That was if I could have been born early, it would have been for him.
Wow.
I would have loved to seen him play.
So your company is Danny Zalisco Presents. Anything on the horizon? What's next for you guys?
Well, what's next for me is continuing to spread the tales of this book. I've got a great big memorabilia collection that I'm starting to share with people by auctioning it off. And part of the proceeds for that are going to go towards some music scholarships once I take care of all the storage I've been accruing for all these years. But I want to give back something to people who want to be musicians along the way that need special help, like money. You know,
right.
It's a very difficult thing to come by these days. And if I can sell some of this stuff that I've been collecting all these years to help somebody out, I think it'd be kind of fun to do that. Got to give back.
Yep. Danny, it's been great talking to you. A fantastic read. Can't wait to finish it. All Excess Occupation concert promoter, Danny Zalisco. You take care of yourself, and I can't wait to read the next one.
Thanks so much, Colleen. I really appreciate having you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hear every episode of Behind the Scenes with Colleen at thebayonline.com or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.